From the LifeWord studios, this is Life Perspectives with Michael Goring.
Joining me today is the Emmy Award-winning anchor, host of the Faulkner Focus, and co-host of Outnumbered, both on Fox News, and the best-selling author of Faith Still Moves Mountains, Miraculous Stories of the Healing Power of Prayer. Harris Faulkner, thanks for joining me today. It's a pleasure to have you.
Oh, thanks for having me. I mean, we just wrapped up the Faulkner Focus and Outnumbered, so I feel like I'm fresh from talking to so many people on TV. I feel so blessed to be able to do that. And then we take it up a notch, and I'm on your show.
Well, I disagree, but I appreciate the sentiment.
Heartfelt.
Hey, in your book, Faith Still Moves Mountains, which is an incredible book, you share personal stories of the power of prayer and the power of faith. How has your faith journey shaped who you are today?
Well, you know, in Faith Still Moves Mountains, I went out and interviewed people. We had people's stories that were about going from waiting on God to maybe having broken away from God, to young teenagers who were out in some open water and didn't realize that they might not make it to shore, and finding God. I mean, I loved doing that book, and it really brought into focus to me how important it is to pray before the storm comes. Because what people are sharing all over the country, all over the world with me, is that, and especially now that I've taken the book in so many different places, and I feel blessed to meet so many Americans and people even outside our country, it brings in with clarity this idea that the Lord needs to hear from you so you're in relationship with the Lord, because things are going to happen in life. And one of my favorite chapters was called, or is called, Amen. And it is about those teenagers who had a senior skip day and all their options were gone. They were in deep, cold water. And I'm not going to spoil it for people who haven't read the whole chapter, but I will say this. What we find out about them later is that, you know, as kids, you are exposed. You go to church. You do all of those things. But it's in those moments that you choose God. And yeah, he leans into you because you leaned into him. And that was such a huge lesson for those teenagers. And I think the book is a reminder that faith still works. Faith still moves mountains. Matthew 17:20 is where I got the idea for the title, Faith Moving Mountains. And I want people to know, you know what? As long as you continue to be in conversation with the Lord, it's amazing what can happen. Don't lose your faith. Don't lose your faith in God. Don't lose the faith that you have in relationship with God.
Yeah, that's good. How did you come to realize that faith would be so central to your own life, especially in the high-pressure world of journalism?
Well, I got it much earlier than that. I mean, I was taught as a very young child to how to pray over your food, my mother had me really learn what it was like even as a child to know that you were his. Mm. My father used to say, it's not only about who you are, but whose you are.
Yeah,
you are ours, you are the Lord's. You know, you belong right where God has put you. And when he changes his mind about where you are, he will put you someplace else because you are his. Mm. If you believe, it can be miraculous in your life, because what you dream of and what you hope for will be so much greater than anything you could have imagined, because it is him.
Yeah. As you know, you're a successful journalist, public figure. How do you balance the demands of your career with your commitment to faith? Have there been times in where your faith provided clarity in your professional decisions?
Oh gosh, so many times. After the bombing in Oklahoma City of the Murrah Federal Building, and so many lives were lost. Remember from that in 1990, in the mid 1990, I think 5 was the year of that. Yes. I was working as a reporter and weekend anchor in Kansas City, which was a 4-hour helicopter ride away. So we got there And there was all these networks. There were so many people that were covering the story as it was still, the building was still smoldering after the explosion. And there was a daycare on the first floor, and 19 little children were killed in that attack on that building. I interviewed a grandmother who said she had fights with God. She wanted to know why her grandbabies had been taken. She was going to pick them up for her daughter that morning. And she was part of the pickup and drop off plan for the family. Grandma was an important role. And that reminded me that sometimes I would have some discussions with God that were tough too. I had a stalker when I was on television for the local Channel 4 in Kansas City. And I had a couple of incidents where I didn't think I was going to live through it, one in particular. And I would say to God, why do you put all these great opportunities in my life only for me to be threatened by someone? Do you not hear my cries for help? And I know to this day, it was the Lord who quickened to my heart and to my mind, why do you doubt me? You know I'm with you. You've known that since you were four. Come on, we got this. But you got to lean into me. And I began to pray harder, but I was angry. I was like, why can't you help me? And so I wrote about that in my very first book called God Has a Plan. And now I look at how far I've come in my faith, not just because of the actions and experiences in my own journey, but because I am around now, because of the success that you describe, so many people. And when I go out, they don't ask me about the news. They ask me, well, how do you keep your relationship with faith and then be in such a secular business? And I'll tell you, Michael, I have had those two things collide. And there was a time when I knew that I couldn't be in a place that didn't let me be who I am. Look, I've been in newsrooms where you ask somebody randomly what their foundational way is of handling disasters, which we do a lot of, particularly in local news, because you're first person on the spot from network. It's got to be huge for us to be first. And I've heard people say, well, I might pour myself a glass of wine, I might do this, or you might hear some tawdry things about people that you think you know in local news. I know I was in that business for many years. And they seem to be let off the hook sometimes. But if you tell somebody that you get through things because you believe in God, I mean, that's like telling them that you have three heads. And so I made a promise to myself very early on that I would not go places and work for people who wouldn't let me express who I am. I am not put here to prophesize. That is not what the Lord, I am a witness. My divine mission on my life is to be a witness. But when people ask me honestly, what do you do when you report first on a network the deaths in Sandy Hook? What do you do when you report on 9/11? And I say, I pray. And if you're not comfortable with me saying that, then I'm not in the right place. And I've made decisions that are tough to make sure that I'm in the right place for people to understand. I mean, I work at Fox, and Fox supports the book. Like HarperCollins is owned by Fox's corporation. So it's important to me that people see the Lord working in my life, and I'm not shy about that.
Well, you're not, and I think that's one thing that makes you so relatable to people, because the country, there's a lot of people of faith, and when we see someone who reports on the news, who gives commentary on the news, and we know that they're a person of faith, that's an encouragement to us. And so we're grateful for your, I'm speaking in general terms, but we're grateful for someone like you that that stands firm in their faith and doesn't compromise.
Well, you bless me for telling me that. One of the things that I teach my young women under construction, which is what I call my young daughters, Bella, who's the oldest, and Danica, the youngest. There's a lot to be said about shining in the way the Lord has put the spotlight on you. And it's not like what man does. I'm not talking about the spotlight because your hair looks good today. And although a good hair day can change your life. Just kidding.
Well, I don't know anything about that, Harris.
Oh, goodness gracious, now we're both in trouble. But when the Lord puts a spotlight on you, he's using you. That's what I live for. I have a sticker here on one of my computer screens. I don't know if I hold this up, it's probably going to read backwards, but it says, I'm world building. And people who are in my office sometimes will, if I turn a monitor around to show them something, they'll say, why does your computer say I'm world building? And I said, well, it's not really for me. It's for me when I turn it around so you can see it. I'm world building for the heavenly world. There's some people I'd like to see again, my parents. There's some, there's belief that the Lord has in me that I would like to bring to fruition. I'd like to ascend if I can. So I have to live here in an earthly place so that I can world build and get ready to go to the next.
Yeah, that's good. You write in the book about the power of prayer, and you've touched on it already. Can you share a story from your life or someone else's that exemplifies how prayer has led to a breakthrough or a change of direction?
I'll use my dad and my mom. So when my dad was in college, my parents went to and met and fell in love at an HBCU, a historically black college and university in the South, because we're all Southerners. And they were at Prairie View down in Texas, and dad was ROTC. But before he joined, my mother told him, and again, they were dating, and Shirley was already in control. He was a combat pilot, but she was in control. And she said, I'm getting to know you, and you need to pray more because you need direction if you're going to do something big in your life. And it was during the time of civil rights, the late 50s, early 60s, that my dad was saying, I want to join the US military. I want to go do this. And the country was struggling. And he said to my mom, all right, so I'm going to pray about this. And from prayer, he made a decision that changed all of our lives. The arc generationally of how high you could fly, literally. And he said, I believe in this country. I know we're going through some race struggle right now, and the world is watching us. And he said, I'm not going to say that I won't even feel it because I will. And I won't say that it won't make my struggles harder because it will. He said, but we're the greatest nation on the planet. And if anybody has potential, it's the United States of America. We will get this right, but we all have to be on board to do what we can do. And I'm being moved to join the US military. And if the Lord is moving in my life, then I need to lean toward that. And my mom was praying with him and for him. So, 57 years of marriage, they married the right people, each other. And she would say to him, when times get hard, and they did in Vietnam, he saw so much in that plane he was flying. His plane at one point was turned to Swiss cheese. It landed by the grace of God on the ground. He fell to his knees, but he survived it. She was praying for him the whole time. But by joining the military and following God's path for his life that he had prayed about, they raised a daughter who really believed that if you have a dream, you will reach what my dad used to call everything above 50,000 feet, 60,000 where fighter jets fly. You'll reach rarefied air with the Lord. And he was right. I feel like I have.
That's incredible. In Faith Still Moves Mountains, you highlight several personal and transformative experiences. What was one of the most impactful stories or lessons you learned in writing the book that maybe surprised you?
Oh my goodness, so many. I think, it changes for me. The mom in a rural Colorado when they were in that movie theater. And so much destruction was going on as the would-be killer, and he turned out to be, opened fire inside a movie showing late at night of the thin, I don't know what part of the Batman series, but that's what they were there for in Aurora. That wasn't that long ago. That was one of the ripped from the headline stories that I chose to tell. We interviewed the mom, and her daughters were teenagers. And they wanted to go to that movie showing. And she wasn't sure. The mom wasn't sure if that was her thing to do, but she went with them. And she thanked God every day that she was with them because who knows what would have happened. And they saw the killer raise his gun and point it at them and go by. And because she was there, she could push them down and take cover over them. And there were so many people who were not spared. She found a way out and prayed the entire time. She said she wondered if the prayer would be heard by the killer and that would cause him to turn. I don't know, now that I'm a mom of teenagers, like I said, there are different stories every now and then that I will really key into. I shared the one with the children, but I think, who found God as they were about to drown. I think the couple in Michigan, that's another one, who she had dealt with health issues her whole life. She was so sick and she was young. She was like in her 30s. The only place they thought that they could put her, the medical professionals, where she wouldn't be hurt and get constant care outside of a hospital was a nursing home. Can you imagine being that young and being in a nursing home and
No.
watching people in their late stages, almost hospice care in some stages, watching people basically die before your eyes at that young age? How are you supposed to keep hope? She leaned in, she prayed, and she met the love of her life who worked at that facility, the nursing home. It was amazing. And through lots of prayer between the two, they got married and they joined a prayer group who began to pray with and for them. And I fast forward through their lives. And do you know she got up out of that chair and walked again eventually? I mean, the Lord always has a plan, but it's on his timing. It must have felt like an eternity for her. But the suddenly in her life came when the Lord moved. And there's so many stories in the book that I love. I feel so privileged to have told all of those 18 stories. And then the 19th was a bit about how I came to faith, that last chapter through my dad
Yeah.
and mom.
So for someone reading your book who may be new to faith, or maybe someone's facing a crisis, what message do you hope they take away from reading it?
Ooh, if you turn to the center of the book,
Yep.
there's some glossy pages. And I worked with a theologian, to come up with individual prayers that were not in the Bible but inspired. So I don't know if you have a copy there, but if you open
I
it, you'll see
do.
those. Oh, good.
But
Great. Maybe you can turn it
they're
around so people can see the shiny pages.
yeah.
Yes. So each one of those has a topic where people might want to start. They're only, just a few of them. But I thought, what about a prayer for thanks? For thankful heart. What about a prayer when things are not going right and you need to get someone else to pray for you, an intercessor in your life? How do you find that person? What would you pray? And they're more and they're and I put what the scripture was that inspired
Yes.
those words, but they're very simplistic. They're not, something that you have to understand every story in the Bible to understand the texture of them. Those are like what I call the beginning prayers. And they're specifically for people, Michael, who maybe have fallen away from God and want to go back in, but they're not sure if they want to go back to church. They feel judged. They shouldn't, but
They
they do.
should. Yeah.
And or maybe they're completely new to the faith and they don't know how to pray to the Lord and they don't want to make a mistake with words. And by the way, here's what my mom taught me. The Lord remembers you when you learned your first words. So you're good. The Lord's got you. He understands no matter how you pray. But I wanted to be a blessing to people in this book by creating some simple prayers in that glossy section so that they could restart or begin a conversation with God. I love that. I
Yeah.
do.
I love the book,
Thank
Miraculous
you.
Stories of the Healing Power of Prayer. Transitioning here a bit, Harris, in a divided and polarized media environment, how do you maintain your Christian values while reporting on sensitive or sometimes controversial topics? Is there a way that you engage politically, while staying true to the faith?
Actually, it's very simplistic. It's not political at all. I remember who my viewers are, and maybe that they're having a worse day than anybody that I could imagine. And the nation has been so divided that if there's a way to get to the crux of information that they really need, they want the truth, Michael. And I know for some people that may feel political. Look, it was a tough season for Democrats, this election season. I don't know if they're going to bounce back very quickly after their loss in November. Losses, because it wasn't just, for the White House. Their Republican majorities in the U.S. House and U.S. Senate as well, they lost it all. And what I realize is the truth came out in many instances. And now they, as a political party, because politics are part of this, as a political party, they'll have to say whether or not they value some of the truth that came out. But my job is to witness and be a truth teller. And I don't think that's political. The only time that gets political is if one side or the other decides not to honor the truth. And I think it's at least what I owe the viewers who are watching Fox, and particularly my two shows, The Faulkner Focus and Outnumbered. I think it's the least that I owe those people that make the time to watch. I can do more by also interviewing them and listening to them and making sure that the questions that they want answered are also coming out of my mouth. So I spend a lot of time. We do voters' voices on my program. I travel a lot. I spend time with people who, and in many instances, are at very low points in theirs because of what the news entails. I was brought up in a military home where you do so much more, and you spend so much of your time with people who are in positions where they may only be able to offer you nothing more than their company. They need you most, and they need to hear the truth the most.
That's good. How can people of faith, from your perspective, contribute to the public discourse,
Oh, I love this.
particularly in a time of political and social tension?
I love that question. Make eye contact with each other. We need accountability now. I think social media has put us in a place where we can say anything we want. We can hurt somebody's feelings. We'll just take our picture down off our profile. And look, Elon Musk has turned a lot around with, well, he doesn't want those empty eggs on Twitter anymore, on X anymore, as it's called now. But we do that with each other, whether it's on social media or not. I just find that people are not civil. They legitimately will think, oh, you can't see me while I stand here and use words that I shouldn't be using right in front of your children. Like it's not a place of civility right now. And we need to go forward, not back, go forward and bring about a new, I think, faith-based version of real civility. It's not enough anymore just to say, oh, girl, I'll pray for you. No, you need to keep that word. If you say you're going to pray for somebody, you need to do it right then. Take their hand, pray for them right then in front of them and say, look, my friend, my coworker, this person is in petition to you, Lord, and now I'm in petition with her or him. Help her or him move this mountain that is obstructing in that particular instance or life. I mean, I just think we need to get there. And remember that we sometimes could really use a little eye contact and just a smile and try to give that. You know, I've been working on my resting face because my teenagers tell me, Mom, sometimes your resting face makes it look like you're not very happy. And I'm like, well, I can't walk around like this all the time. I look goofy. But I've been thinking about it. When I make eye contact with someone, I automatically tilt my mouth up a little bit. Hey. And I do realize that when you say hi to somebody and you say, hey, how's your day? And you keep walking because you never intended to hear the answer, don't do that. Give them a, hey, I hope you're having a good day and keep it moving. Unless you have time to say, and then expect a real answer for people. When people ask me how I am and they walk away, I don't even open my mouth because I realize they don't really care. And maybe I'm having a great day. Maybe I'm not having a great day. But what they really wanted to do was just acknowledge my existence. And for me, that's enough.
Harris Faulkner, I appreciate your time. It's been an honor and a privilege to have you on the show. You can watch Harris on Fox News weekdays from 11 to noon Eastern Standard Time on the Faulkner Focus, and weekdays from 12 to 1 p.m. on Outnumbered, both on the Fox News channel. And to purchase Harris's book, Faith Still Moves Mountains, visit foxnews.com/books. Until next time, I'm Michael Goring, and this has been Life Perspectives. Thanks for watching.
Thank you, Michael.